Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. Visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.
B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk Sox and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
All right, good morning, Gasper and Murray. 98.5 The Sports Hub, coming to you from the Town Fair Tire Studio. Here with you for the full 3 hours today, including the Sports Hub Celtics show coming up at noon, which will be mostly, I think, just us on the trade deadline and the lack of action on the Celtics. So if you have thoughts there, you got to wait like an hour. In the meantime, I think it'll just be two other things that we'll be discussing between now and two in the time that we have, Chris, and that's crapping on the Red Sox for the way that this whole week has gone down and trading Mookie Betts and how this trade just looks worse by the day, and Chaim Bloom looks either like devious or fool, and the team just looks worse by the day. And Tom Brady. The Brady watch continues. I think there was some interesting stuff that came from a new column from Tom Curran. He, along with Phil Perry, NBC Sports Boston, all over this thing, and he posted this late yesterday afternoon. Timing is all wrong for Tom Brady. Patriots getting deal done before a free agency. This thing, I am now more convinced by the day this isn't getting done between Brady and the Patriots between now and March 17th, March 18th, right?
Yep.
Right around then.
Yeah.
He's going to, you know, he's going to be a free agent. He's going to enjoy all the fruits of being a free agent, getting wine and dine, flown in, flown out, the whole the Kevin Durant Hamptons thing, right? Like, he wants to experience that for the first time in his 20-year career, and I frankly don't blame him. But some of the stuff that was in Tom's column that I hadn't heard elsewhere, just going about halfway down this thing, you can read it at NBCSportsBoston.com. Brady is open to coming back under the right circumstances. Same goes for Bill Belichick. But their circumstances are at cross purposes. Kraft wants Brady to stay. He's on record saying that. But he's removed the team's ability to force Brady to stay away when he agreed to wipe away the franchise tag because he didn't want Brady to stay against his will. And while my understanding is the Patriots are willing to extend themselves financially to keep him, Belichick will receive no edict from the owner on what to do. Before I go on, do you believe that part? That if it really push comes to shove, that Kraft won't step in here to keep Brady because he doesn't want to deal with any kind of blowback from the fans?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've written that before too. I think that's the way everybody wants it at the outset. Like, I've told you for a while, this is going to be Bill's decision. However, I think there's a belief among some of the people in Tom's camp that when push comes to shove, and this is why I've called this a three-way staring match, that when push comes to shove, if they're close or it really comes down to Tom being like, I'm out of here, that Kraft will come in and do it. Because, look, the Krafts have said this type of thing before, that they're going to stay out of it. And then it's sort of like if it's Vince Wilfork or Logan Mankins or something, you know, and it gets close at the end, they'll push it across the finish line. I think a lot of people have a hard time believing, myself included, that they won't do that. Now, obviously, you know, there are some risks in that, and I think Tom goes into that later on in that piece. You know, sort of whether you believe the Jimmy Garoppolo thing or not, that Bill was sort of nudged to do that, there is this risk of alienating Belichick if you force him to do something that he doesn't want to do.
Yeah, and I know, and with all due respect to Tom, you know, he says that that's just a fallacy that keeps being talked about. I don't know. I believe that yeah. You know, that
well, I tried to tell you guys the same thing on this a few weeks ago on Felger and Maz, and you guys shouted me down.
We did.
And Bedard tweeted, who got to Gasper? Yeah. I said the exact same thing.
Because I don't believe it for a second. I think that his hand was forced there to trade Garoppolo, and we all know how that whole thing played out. So Tom goes on to write here, and this is where I think
think it gets interesting.
Yep.
The Sunday report during ahead of the Super Bowl, the Patriots were willing to go north of $30 million, presumably for a one-year salary, to keep Brady, which came from Ian Rappaport of NFL Network, has been a source of irritation for the team this week. My understanding is no parameters have been set. That number is now an albatross to the proceedings. The proceedings themselves, they'll have to get underway soon because the timeline for negotiations, a huge wrench in this process. But again, this has been a source of irritation for the team this week. So I read that yesterday, and my immediate thought, Chris, was, all right, you know, you can't tamper. And we've seen Brady at the UFC fight a few weeks back with the owner of the Raiders. And it's not like they were probably talking any kind of terms or, you know, there wasn't any kind of pitch to come to Vegas. But you know these conversations are being had. That $30 million, the $30 million that was thrown out there, that's they know. Like, that's going to be around the number that they're going to get offered from other teams, be it the LA Chargers, Vegas Raiders, whoever. And they, Brady's team, I don't think it was him himself, but Brady's team, they put that out there. I don't think that conversation actually happened between them and the Patriots, and that number actually exists on the Patriots end of things, because why would they be irritated? Why was that a source of irritation for the team this week? Why is the number now an albatross to the proceedings? To me, I read that and I immediately thought, oh, Brady's can't put that out there.
It's possible. I say Ian's pretty plugged in, though, with the Patriots organization.
Right. That's the one part that doesn't make sense.
Particularly the higher levels of the Patriots organization. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe this is a source of irritation for one Bill Belichick. And I don't know.
I see what you're saying.
I have no idea where this came from, but I know that Ian is pretty sourced up in the Patriots. So, is it possible that it came from Brady's camp or his agents? It is, but I find a hard time believing that Ian wouldn't have run it by someone with the Patriots.
Okay, so I see what you mean. So, not to put words in your mouth, but I hear that, and that's maybe what ownership put out there. Mm-hmm. Bill didn't have anything to do with it. Bill hears that, and is like, what? I'm not giving a 42-year-old quarterback $30 million a year, even if it's incentive-laden. F that.
But you've also heard the other stuff, and Tom's reported this, Tom Curran's reported this, other people have too, that it's not – but like, I don't think they have to hit $30 million to bring Brady back. You know, I think if it's $28 million and they put some weapons around him, like, I think that would be good enough. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, we go back and forth on this thing. It's really interesting. Like, if you're Bill, and he's in a tough spot, I get it. But don't you have to look at the landscape of the league and be like, basically the going rate for any quarterback who's halfway decent is like $22 million. Like, even, like, you know, Nick Foles, like, bums like that. That's like what they get. So you have to sort of...
What's the number on Garoppolo? Is it 23.8? It's like just...
Well, that's his number next year, but the AAV, and that's the other part of this, Jim, is that don't confuse the AAV with what his salary cap number will be, Brady, I'm talking about next year. You know, AAV is one thing. How you finagle it for salary cap purposes in a given year is a different one. As Bill once said, as we all know, salary cap space can be maneuvered in a variety of ways. So... that's the reality. So I think when you look at it from an AAV standpoint, yeah, Garoppolo's at like 27.5. So Brady probably wants to top that. So I would say if you put him in the 28 to 30 range, but again, that's not like outlandish. Like guys like Matt Ryan, you know, Russell Wilson, Jared Goff, those guys are all in the 30s in terms of AAV. So I don't think, you know, $28 million per season is backbreaking for the Patriots.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think the money is also such a big factor for Brady if he's to come back here. It's whether or not he can be surrounded by more talent. And so he's going to have to be pitched. You know, there was a story from Dan Graziano of ESPN behind the paywall this week of, you know, where these big three of veteran quarterbacks could end up. And so, that of course, that's Brady, it's Rivers, it's Drew Brees. And Graziano wrote that, you know, he feels like that, and maybe it's coming from Brady's camp, like he wants to do this whole song and dance, the whining and dining, and he's going to also have to be pitched by the Patriots, which I just think conjures up like kind of hilarious scene of him, you know, dodging phone calls or telling Bill like, I can't really make that time. Actually, if you can come down to New York, I could fit you in this window, 11 o'clock this Friday. Oh, you can't make it. All right, we'll have to try to figure out something next week. Yeah. And like, you know, that would just drive Belichick crazy.
Well, I said to you guys yesterday, I mean, it's a little bit, this is just my opinion. No one has told me this, but I think it's a little bit of payback time. It's like Bill's turn to sweat because since 2017, Tom's been trying to get this contract extension. He's gotten the stiff arm from Bill. And now Tom has the leverage, I think, or at least he feels that way. So we'll see how it plays out. And what I keep coming down to is I think that at the end of the day, and I said this a few years ago when they were sort of having the Cold War over Guerrero after the 17 season, you know, it was easy to have a lot of posturing and to remain intractable in your position during the offseason when nothing was really at stake. But when it really got down to it and it's like, now it's training camp time, now it's winning time, we need to get back on the same page. And they didn't. They won a Super Bowl. I kind of feel the same way about this. It's easy now that it's February for both sides to sort of posture and that's it. But when it really gets down to it and it's, you know, March 18th and beyond and stuff starts flying and guys start coming off the board and there's a deadline to it, I think both sides look around at the end of the day and will say, we don't have a better option. There's no better option.
Yeah, and I ultimately think that, you know, while I, at this point, I've just, after this season, and I've been steadfast on this for a while now, like, as much as, you know, look, I'm Brady over team, but at this point, if it's going to end up playing out the way that it did last year, and it's a hollow 12-4, they're out in the first or second round, and Brady's going to be miserable week in, week out, even after wins.
Pissy after wins.
Yeah, Chris, I just want to see them go their separate ways. Like, I want to see a re-energized Tom Brady with a new franchise and try to walk off into the sunset, try to win one with another team, and because of guys like Felger and that are, you know, so pro-Belichick, let's see it. You're so confident in his abilities to win with just about anybody. Well, let's see it with Stidham or Andy Dalton or whatever bum he would bring in.
Yeah.
And I want to see how it looks. I really, at this point, like, I feel like I've seen it all with this team, especially after 28-3, and the fact that they won that 2 years ago, and I thought that team sucked at 11-5 for the most part. At this point, I want to see how it looks on both sides. I really do. And I just don't, and Tom writes in his column here to wrap up, like, I don't see how they can make him happy in terms of bringing in other personnel. So Curran finishes up his column by saying, how can the Patriots show Tom Brady that 2020 will be better? They can't. The Patriots have 2 days in March to convince the representatives of prospective free agents that New England is right for their guy. Meanwhile, how can prospective free agents even know Brady's going to re-sign? Another meanwhile, if Brady doesn't re-sign before free agency, $13.5 million in dead money hits the salary cap March 18th at 4 p.m. And a final meanwhile, it's crazy to think Brady's going to negotiate to have the franchise tag removed for 2020, go to the cusp of free agency, fold his tent, come back to the same old, not after he spent last year ducking and chucking and shaking his head. I just don't, I don't know how they can financially or surround him with more talent. Maybe I guess they could trade for Odell Beckham Jr. or whatever, but that feels like a bit of a pipe dream to me. But at the end of the day, I don't know. I'm kind of with you. Like, it's a lot of posturing. I know his team probably, you know, and that's Alex Guerrero, his agent, and everybody else is probably saying, you're like, yeah, you know, stick it to Bill.
Who's really saying stick it to Bill.
Stick it to Bill. I don't, the hell with them. You've been here 20 years. Nothing's changing. Super G is all about them.
You are a puppet for them.
Yeah. They've treated you like garbage. You are that franchise. You know, so I'm thinking all those people are in his ear, but at the end of the day, is he just, given his history here and how many times he's taken less money and how many times he's capitulated to the team, do you really see him doing that? And I don't know. I just, as much as I want to see it, I have a feeling it's probably not going to end up happening.
I also don't think he really likes change, and I think it's going to be hard. I think he's going to enjoy being wined and dined, but again, when it really comes down to it, to be uprooted like that, I don't know. It's just my feeling. And I think that he wants to make him sweat a little bit. And I think there's still some underlying resentment of the way he's been treated the last 3 years. And so it's nice for him to have. It was very important for him to have control of this scenario, because I think he's felt like the last 3 years he didn't have control. And Tom's talked about this, too. You know, you've noticed him. He's more and more the last couple of years. He said, well, I don't know. I'm just an employee. You know, I don't. And that sort of attitude is basically reflected upon the way he feels he's been treated. So now he's sort of in control of this thing. But at the end of the day, I still think that they end up together because there's not better options. The one X factor I would say is this, but quickly, I know we have to go to break, but what if Drew Brees, and somebody mentioned this to me at the station, what if Drew Brees retires and New Orleans comes calling? All of a sudden, there is a better option than the Patriots.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
And that was one that Jimmy Stewart put out, like the executive producer for Felger Manz, like a month and a half ago.
Yeah, that's who told me
that,
too.
He's got his sources, too. So, but, you know, you're indoors. That team is stacked. Look at the weapons they have. There's him throwing to Michael Thomas. You have Alvin Kamara in the backfield. Like, that's a real team with a real offense.
And that team has Jared Cook, the tight end the Patriots want.
Right. Yeah. No, I know. Yeah, they're stacked. And a good offensive mind in Sean Payton, like a great spot. Or, how about one, I know a lot of Patriots fans always call up, how about him going back to where he grew up with the 49ers? Someone feels like that could be an option. It would take a bold move for the 49ers to cut Jimmy Garoppolo, something I'm for after his pathetic performance in the Super Bowl this past Sunday. We'll actually touch on that next here on Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
If I am John Lynch and I am Kyle Shanahan and I'm Mike Shanahan, I'm thinking we are so close that if I could have Tom Brady at still a pretty high level for Tom Brady, that if I'd had him last night, I believe they would have won the game with Tom Brady. He's just been there and done all that. He's going to make the right play at the right time. He's going to check you out of plays, into run plays, which Tom has no problem with. Right. He has no throwing ego at all. He will check to run plays right. when it screams for yeah. him. So the point is, I would do that for 2 years, and I would give you a better shot at them winning the next two Super Bowls with Tom Brady than Jimmy Garoppolo. There's some haywire gene in Jimmy G. I call him Jimmy Interception. He's going to throw you a couple a game, maybe three a game. I don't trust him. He's capable of having a big, good game like he did at New Orleans. He's also capable of last night. That was horrendous.
Skip Bayless of Fox Sports 1, day after the Super Bowl. Gaspar Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. And on the one end, I completely agree with him in that the Niners should be bold here and cut Garoppolo's ass before a big chunk of his salary becomes fully guaranteed on April 1st. And on the other part of me, it makes me want to throw bleach in my eyes and throw myself down a flight of stairs because I never want to agree with Skip Bayless. But I do. I agree with him. And on the Garoppolo end of things, I don't know if Brady necessarily wants to go back there because that's where he grew up. I just feel like that's such a
overrated storyline.
Yeah, it's almost a bit of a fallacy. It's like because, oh, you see the photo of him when he was at the Dwight Clark catch game when he was 4 years old. And it's like, okay, neat. Yeah, and he grew up in San Mateo. We all know the story. But have you ever actually heard from Brady's mouth that he would love to play for the Niners and go back there? Like, I think that's kind of a false narrative. But the Garoppolo end of it? Oh, no. I was all over this week, too, because after that pathetic performance in Super Bowl 54, God, it felt so good to be right. I think there's recent precedent for why the Niners should cut his ass, because you don't want to end up like the Jacksonville Jaguars of a few years ago. 3 years ago, that team goes to the AFC Championship game.
Yeah.
With Blake Bortles. Bortles finally, I guess, lives up to the expectation, kind of just like Jimmy G. And then Bortles fools everyone right up until the AFC Championship game against the Patriots. Because think of how close this mirrored Super Bowl 54 when I break this down for you, Chris. If you don't remember, in that AFC Championship game, the Jaguars lead 14-10. It's halftime. They have three timeouts in a 14-10 game. And Doug Marrone, the coach of the Jaguars, decides, you know what? I don't really trust my quarterback, so I'm going to run. And we're going to just go into halftime 14-10. We're going to nurse this lead. Sunday, the same thing basically played out. 10-10, three timeouts, almost close to 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Kyle Shanahan doesn't trust Jimmy Garoppolo. He doesn't trust his quarterback. And so the Jaguars lose that game, as we know. Bortles not trusted by his coach. And then that idiot team gave him a 3-year, $54 million deal that included $26.5 million guaranteed.
Ooh, I forgot about that.
He was cut a year later. The Niners shouldn't make that same mistake that Jacksonville made 3 years ago. Again, you have recent history that shows you, all right, you might believe in this guy. And because of his age, maybe there's still more upside. Don't do it. I think if you were to ask the LA Rams to a man in terms of their management and even Sean McVay, you happy you gave Jared Goff that contract?
Oh, God, no.
That's another one, too. Again, yeah. Recent history in the last couple of years. Don't fool yourself. Just because every once in a while the kid can make a really good throw and he's a puppet for his coach. But when the going gets tough and he has to really face pressure, you saw on Sunday in that game, Garoppolo is not made for it. And you could still argue, well, you know, it's his first full year as a starter. He's been in the league 6 years.
Yeah, I heard Shanahan saying that, too. I mean, look, he had a lot more starts than a lot of other guys. And here's the thing I look at, too. You can say first full year as a starter, but for me, anybody that enters an offseason and and goes to a full training camp anointed as the starter, like, that's your first full season as a starter. So for me, like, a lot of times I'll say, like, Brady in 02. For me, that's his first full season because the whole league knew he was the starting quarterback right. that year and could prep for it. Well, the same thing with Garoppolo. I know he got hurt last year, but it's like he had the starts he made here with the Patriots. He had the, five or six starts he made after he got traded to San Francisco. Then he had a whole offseason program as anointed as the starter, a whole training camp anointed as the starter, and then he had those three games. It's not like they keep trying to act like the guy's never been a starter in the NFL. He's had ample experience to perform better than he performed in the postseason.
Oh, yeah, no.
And nobody mentioned this during the year when people were shoving that Saints game down our throat. Did you ever hear anybody say, well, you know, he has fewer starts than Baker Mayfield, so pretty amazing what he did in that Saints game. They never mention it. It's only when he fails.
No, of course not. That's just ammo that the pro Garoppolo whites try to use.
He's the boohoo Garoppolo crew.
Been in the league 6 years. He's been in that system with the Niners for 2.5. So don't give me the, well, it's his first full year as a starter. It's a crock. And I think you had the big test on Sunday, and it showed you he ain't ready for it. And the coach was terrified of him in that first half. I've kind of gone off track here. Oh, shame on me because we're ragging on Garoppolo too much. This was more about Brady is what we opened up with. But Brady to the Niners, I kind of feel like that one's a bit of a pipe dream. I mean, what do you think the landing spots are, the realistic landing spots if it's not here? Is it the Chargers, Vegas? Think Dallas could be an outlier? That's been kind of
Yeah, I know, Michael Irvin was sort of hinting. I mean, if you're Dallas, I just don't understand why you do it. I mean, your quarterback's good enough, and you can have kind of 10 years with him. Dak Prescott, and you just brought in Mike McCarthy. I'm assuming you got that guy as a coach because you thought he could maximize your quarterback's performance. So I don't understand why you'd go for Brady, and it's not like they need to sell tickets. They're the most valuable sports franchise in the world. So I don't get that one. I think Vegas, the Raiders, Tennessee, and then I think there's maybe like a wild card. You know, some people are not completely sold that Miami's out. They think they're posturing. Even though Chan Gailey's the offensive coordinator there now, not O'Shea. And I understand the comments of the owner, Stephen Ross, but people think maybe that's just posturing to avoid sort of tampering. I think Miami could have some appeal, certainly, for Super G and for the TB12 brand. And then I think there's some wild card out there that we're just not thinking of.
Like, so Tampa keeps getting thrown out there. And if you look at some of the odds that are, you know, the people are these books that are taking odds on where Brady lands, that one's kind of like middle of the pack. And I get it, like, it's a terrible market. No one really cares about that team. It's one of the most irrelevant franchises in all of professional sports. But as terms of, as far as weapons are concerned, like,
there's a lot of weapons there.
Yeah, right. There's a lot
but
for him to
see,
work with.
I don't know. I just can't really see Brady in Tampa. Like,
hideous uniform,
like
too.
Like, this, you know, just strip mall central. I don't know. I mean, I think there's maybe an outlier team like the Saints, you know, if something happens with Breeze. Or, and I think this one's more of a pipe dream at this point. But again, I've said this before, like a Minnesota. You know, maybe Minnesota, sort of behind the scenes, and not wanting to piss off Cousins, who has a year left on his deal, maybe they sort of kick the tires on Brady and see if they can upgrade. And that sort of ties back into the Jimmy G thing. Maybe there's a little bit of a sort of quarterback cascade here where, you know, the Niners say, oh, Cousins was originally our guy. He's available. Let's cut Jimmy G. Minnesota says, you know, we have a win now team. Let's get Brady. And they say, okay, we'll trade Cousins to you. So, I mean, that's all far-fetched. But I'm just saying, when you're asking about realistic options, I think there's something we're not thinking of that's out there. There's somebody, I think, who is remaining in the weeds right now on Brady.
Yeah, well, I'm with you on that, too. And I think gun to his head, if you ask Kyle Shanahan, you know, sodium pentothal, that kind of thing, he would take Kirk Cousins.
I agree.
That's what he wanted from the get-go.
Yeah. Now, and to just tie it back to Garoppolo quickly, that's one reason I think they won't cut him, is you can just ride it out with Garoppolo for one more year, see what happens with Cousins. If he doesn't get an extension there, then Cousins could be a free agent, and then you could part with Garoppolo and go to Cousins. So they're in a good situation there, I think, in San Francisco, the way they structured that deal.
Let's go to John in Attleboro, first up here on Casper and Mari this morning. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Love listening to you guys on Saturday when I'm out and about doing errands. So I just had a question about Brady and contract, and I'm trying to envision a way that Brady does come back and the Patriots bite the bullet if it's not done before the 18th because of the full dead money hit on the first year. So my question was, say they gave him a 2-year $55 million, can they say, oh, the first year is 25 and 30, or for salary cap do they just divide it between the number of years equally?
No, you can move it. There's something called the 30% rule. So there can't be like a 30% difference, I think. I think I'm getting this right. The 30% rule I know exists, but I hope I'm explaining it right. There basically can't be like a 30% difference or greater than a 30% difference in the base salary, I think, from year to year. But I also find, like, I think teams can also get around that by declaring something a roster bonus instead of a signing bonus. So some teams will do that. A roster bonus would be due all in 1 year versus the signing bonus, which for salary cap purposes can be prorated across the length of the contract. So there's ways around it. I will say this, and I wanted to bring this up when you were reading that current story. I don't know how it would work, but, you know, my sources indicated to me when I asked about this earlier that the $13.5 million was not a deal breaker. In other words, if they got past the 18th, that was not a deal breaker for the Patriots in terms of saying, well, that's it. You know, we're not paying this $13.5 million on top of what we have to pay you now. I don't think that they look at it that way. I also think that part of this might be tied to getting a new CBA in place, because I think those rules would, if it's in place in time, would be triggered for this offseason, or it would at least change a lot of the rules that are in place. If you have an extension, basically what happens is now the final league year stuff doesn't come into play. Some of the stuff like salary cap charges automatically accelerate to all 1 year. There's no more June 1st dividing it by two. If you cut a guy, well, it's not the final league year if you have an extension, if you have a deal beyond this year. So I think there's a little bit of that going on where the team's looking at it thinking like, this deal is going to get done. And the NFL Players Association guys are meeting now in Los Angeles to debate basically the proposal they've gotten with the 17-game season from the owners.
So I didn't know that part, that if the CBA, they get a new CBA done, that would actually take effect for this.
It's not, I didn't phrase that well. Not that it would take effect, but it takes away the idea of in a final league year scenario where there's nothing, there's no CBA beyond that year. There are some different stipulations that come into it. Like, you know, teams can use the franchise tag and the transition tag and stuff like that. And my understanding is that if you get an extension, so we know there's some sort of CBA agreement beyond this year, that wipes out those final league year stipulations that have existed in the past and that would exist in this environment for this offseason, because it's not the final league year. There is an agreement beyond this year now. So I think some teams are sort of looking, okay, if we can get this done, then that will change the landscape by March 18th for how we do things.
Well, I know we're almost a week removed from it, but we are going to relive some of the highlights of Super Bowl 54 because Chris and I, we were right. We were right about Jimmy Garoppolo. See, told you, caw, caw, we're going to crow about Jimmy Garoppolo, and we'll take your Brady calls coming up next here on Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray. You will listen. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
You look at the opposite side of the field, and you're looking at Jimmy G's eyes. Is there fear at that point in time? Like, are you worried that this dude, Jimmy G, can go down and beat you? Or are you totally confident as the Chiefs defense, like, this guy's not going to go beat him?
In my head, honestly, I was saying, this guy's not going down the field and beat him.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, never had this feeling before, so kind of an unreal feeling, but it is what it is.
I am a passenger.
Such an appropriate song for the passenger, Jimmy Garoppolo. And that was Chiefs defensive end Frank Clark to start, who was on First Take earlier this week. And you heard him after the game, too, basically saying, like, all that money, you can't make these throws. We weren't afraid of you, and nor should they be. And then Garoppolo there, I've never had this feeling before. The good thing is, Jimmy, is you'll never have to have it again because you ain't getting back.
Terrible.
He ain't. Hey, him and Goff. You had your taste. That's it. You'll never get back in that game.
You really feel that way?
Yes.
Uh-huh. See, I'm not ready to go that far. I think he's pretty good. It just annoys me how quickly people wanted to anoint him. And I actually am writing this for the Globe on Sunday. I think I figured it out psychologically, Jim. People were so desperate for the Patriots to have some sort of victory this postseason, it became Jimmy G. He became the embodiment of Patriots success this postseason. So people deluded themselves into thinking he was actually contributing to the Niners going to the Super Bowl in the postseason.
I think part of it, and I think, for others, your Felger and Mazes of the world, it was about Belichick got it right. This was the successor. And, of course, the argument is always, well, do you think this would end up happening here? You think Bill Wooden got the most out of him? I'm sorry. I think he's good, not great, and people were too quick to anoint this kid.
I agree.
And there were so many. This is where, caw, caw, here's where we get to crow, because Chris and I were right. There's so many juicy, delicious, and hilarious stats that came from his failure in that game. And just the ones on the surface, the Niners' last four drives of the game. Again, the Niners up 20-10, fourth quarter. Last four drives, start with the first one. 5 plays, 17 yards, punt. 3 plays, 5 yards, punt. 7 plays, 27 yards, turnover on downs. 2 plays, 0 yards, interception. And then you dig a little deeper. Oh, they get so much better, Chris. Garoppolo 1 for 9 for 20 yards and 2 picks when he was pressured. Also didn't complete a ball over 20 yards in the air.
And there were 2 passes batted down there, too.
His quarterback rating in the first 3 quarters, 100.6. That's good. That's good. But you need 4 quarters, you see, not 3 to win a Super Bowl. And Jimmy G's quarterback rating in the fourth quarter, otherwise known as nut cutting time, 2.8. Not 3, 2.8. And in the fourth quarter overall, Garoppolo, 3 of 11, 36 yards, interception, fourth down sack.
Oh, so good. Oh, so good, Chris. And is it? He was as inept and jittery as the guy I called correctly in this game last year, Jared Goff.
Yeah, you did nail the Goff thing. Yeah, you have a good feel for. I have to say,
for suck quarterbacks, I got a good feel.
On Felger and Maz, you are the best quarterback evaluator. Now that's not saying much.
Yeah, that's
to be honest. I mean, you know, that's like a group of 65-year-old basketball players and saying you're the best athlete. But you are the best quarterback evaluator on Felger and Maz by far.
Oh, well, thank you. That's yeah, probably you are. The best compliment.
And by the way, you neglected to mention that 2.8 quarterback rating is the lowest fourth quarter quarterback rate in the history of the Super Bowl. All 54 Super Bowls featuring two quarterbacks, no quarterback ever has had a lower fourth quarter quarterback rating than Jimmy Garoppolo.
On the Chiefs end of it, though, just quickly, over on the game, did you enjoy the game? Do you think it was well played?
I enjoyed it.
I thought it was slow as F. I thought the first half sucked. I think
really?
Both of those teams were just trying to jab at each other and not screw up. I thought it was kind of appropriate given the history of Andy Reid and Kyle Shanahan, especially Reid, and I know he'd only been to one, but it just felt like they were both teams were trying not to screw up. But the fourth quarter was phenomenal. I will admit, granted I'm very drastic, this shouldn't be a surprise, after that second Mahomes interception and it's 20-10 Niners, I was like, oh Jesus, like they're gonna lose this game and Garoppolo's gonna be the MVP and I'm gonna want to die. Because he was dinking and dunking and
he really was dinking and dunking.
And he was making a few decent throws here and there, but given the stats and how that MVP voting goes in that game, typically it's always usually going to a quarterback. It was trending that way. But boy, oh God, that fourth quarter was great. But do you think the Chiefs are also here to stay here, like simply because of Mahomes, and they're gonna have to pay him, you know, $40 million a year in the next few seasons. That's a sustainable thing that they've got there simply because of the quarterback.
I'm going to answer your question in a second, but I have to give one more Jimmy G thing.
Oh, please.
Do you realize that until that game, he had yet to trail in the playoffs? So, you know, early on, they trailed to the Chiefs 7-3, but he also had never trailed in the second half of any of those playoff games, which I think is a really important, pertinent point to make about what we're talking about, because the one time they needed him, it wasn't protecting a lead, it wasn't playing from ahead, it wasn't being a complimentary piece, it was, you're down, your team needs you to lead, you can't be a passenger, you have to be a driver. He couldn't get it done. Conversely, to your question about Mahomes did that all postseason long. They came back in every game, double-digit deficits, and Mahomes is now one of those guys who's elevated himself to the stature of like a Brady or a Rodgers in terms of this. His teammates think that they are never out of a game because they have Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
And to me, that is truly the mark of a franchise player, really in any sport, right? But we've been fortunate enough to have that for Brady for 20 years, where you feel like we have this guy, so it's never really over. And it's not a stat. You're not going to find it on Pro Football Focus. You can't really quantify it. But to me, it's the thing that means the most and defines a great player the most, the fact that there's just this belief level on the guys in his sideline so that an entire team can accomplish something that they probably shouldn't. And that's what happened with the Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
And they're here to stay.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, look, when I look at their team, obviously you're going to have to pay Mahomes a lot and we'll see what happens. But imagine if they get like a really good running back, like if they find another Kareem Hunt. I mean, Damian Williams is fine, but let's be honest, he's a backup. You know, that system kind of makes him.
He's like a third down specialist, basically.
Yeah, that system kind of makes him. What if they find another, you know, Kareem Hunt? Even if they find like a David Montgomery, the guy Chicago drafted in the third round. What if they do that? I just think that coach, that system, I felt so good for Andy Reid. I'm glad he finally won. You can still make the Cheesecake Factory jokes, but
me too. He's a likable guy. And I think he's been, in this last 20 years, the Brady Belichick era, he's been probably the second, maybe third best coach in the league who just couldn't get over that hump.
Yeah.
And I've always, as much as I've always kind of mocked him, mostly because of, the Cheesecake Factory menu thing and how he is just terrible with the challenges and the clock and all that. His work with
Shanahan made him look like Belichick.
Oh, he really did. But his work with quarterbacks, like, that's his best attribute. I mean, for what he got out of Alex Smith.
Yeah. He was great with Michael Vick.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Nabb.
Yeah.
I mean, you name it.
Yeah.
You're right. And even like A.J. Feely almost came in here in 07 and beat the Patriots.
Right.
Remember
that
game?
Yeah.
He almost beat them.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's great. I mean, he is a true quarterback
offensive
whisperer.
Innovator.
And so I'm really, but I want to ask you this. Were you conflicted at all? Because this is when agendas collide. On the one hand, you have the delicious, delicious schadenfreude of Chiefs fans always losing. On the other hand, you have to be right about this Jimmy G thing. So were you conflicted at all?
No, and there was a lot of No, because I've at this point I've been so beaten down because of all these loser teams that have actually gotten over the hump here in recent years. It really kind of started with the Cavs and then the Washington Capitals. Like, I just expect all that to happen now. Like, all these loser teams are getting over the hump. I never thought I would see it in my lifetime, so I can now live with that. And the other thing is, there was a babyish Patriots fan thing that I found annoying in that, why are you rooting for the Chiefs? Like, the Chiefs are a rival. Like, look, Tyreek Hill is detestable. Same with Travis Kelce. I'm with you on that. But I don't know. You're going to root against Patrick Mahomes? I think he's great for the league. He's a blast to watch. I was kind of rooting for Andy Reid because I wanted to see him finally get over the hump, too. Like, I didn't find them hard to root for at all. I really didn't. I think Mahomes is, it's just, he's the face of the league now. You know, accept that. Like, what, you're mad about that because it's no longer Tom Brady and Brady's towards the end here? Like, I get it. You know, people are going to get a little bit butthurt, but I think he's a joy to watch. I really
do. To me, he's Favre with better game sense. I mean, he's wild to watch. He's so much fun. And again, just what I said before, that idea of when that guy's on your side, and it's only his second full year as a starter, when that guy's on your side, you feel like you're never out of a game. And even, you know, his one postseason loss, which was a tremendous effort by the Patriots, who outplayed the Chiefs, had a brilliant game plan. I thought Belichick completely outcoached Andy Reid last year. And I wrote that to the point that some of the people I know in the Kansas City organization were pissed at me for writing that. But I thought it was true. And when you look at it, that game, Mahomes still got that game to overtime after being shut out in the first half. Yeah. I mean, really, the Patriots never should have had to go to overtime to win that game. And they did, and Mahomes was the biggest reason why.
All right, I said I'd get to your calls this segment, but we're up against it, so I promise we'll get to that next as we will segue into the Sports of Celtics show at noon. Long commercial-free segment coming up next here on Gasper and Murray.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray. This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
All right, we've been reliving the hilarious nightmare that was Super Bowl 54 for the passenger, Jimmy Garoppolo. And the Brady watch continues. There was an interesting column by Tom Carr in NBC Sports Boston posted yesterday, NBCSportsBoston.com, and in which really it feels like, you know, Brady is going to head to free agency. He's going to be wined and dined, and he is also going to have the Patriots pitch him. That was also written by Dan Graziano behind the ESPN paywall this week, too, which I think conjures up such a hilarious scene I would love to see play out of Brady and his people just kind of busting Belichick's balls a little bit, making him sweat. I got this meeting with the Chargers today. I got Vegas tomorrow. Oh, you wanted to try to meet tomorrow? I can't really fit you in, Bill.
What? What do you mean you can't fit me in?
Can you come down to New York? I might be able to see you in New York. Oh, you can't make it in New York? Yeah, let's talk next week, click.
You son of a bitch.
Like, that kind of thing I would love to see play out. Is it probably going to play out that way? No, but, you know, it's fun to conjure up in your head. Frank the Tank, you're next here on Gasper Murray. Hello, Frank.
Hey, guys. Look, real quick, congratulations to Kansas City, their fans. They deserved it. They had a tough season at the beginning, and they came through. So good for them, even though I pretty much despise everybody on that team except for Mahomes. You know, Travis Kelce is just walking genitalia. He's just, what a douche that guy is. I mean, really. Look, I'm going to skip the Brady thing because I just want to get right to the Red Sox, if that's okay.
Sure, yeah.
Look, you know, I hate the Yankees. I hate the Canadians. I hate the Jets. I hate the Lakers. My number five is Red Sox ownership, this incarnation of Red Sox ownership. I have despised these D-bags ever since I got kicked out of Fenway, out of the Green Monster seats, for wearing a Yankee Suck t-shirt that I bought there, that I got booted out for, and then was told that I had to dump the two beers that I had in my hands, when I was like, I'm staying right here until I finish my beers, then you can kick me out. These people, they have made money hand over fist from everybody in this town and in this region. And I don't want to completely bash them. They've done some great things. They've brought championships here, and that's great. I love it. I understand it. But, you know, this whole thing about the luxury tax, and what you guys are basically printing money. Everybody in this town goes to the Red Sox. You guys, we demand good product, yes. nobody's going to do what they should do and not go to the game, not buy product, not buy tickets, not buy their beers at their stands. This is disgusting what they're doing with Mookie Betts and everything else. These guys, I really, really wish they would just sell the team and just disappear into dust.
Thanks, Frank. And I couldn't have said it any better because I'm 100% with you. And over my dead body will you see me in that stadium until further notice.
Really?
Yeah. That's how I feel about it. And it's funny, too. They've brought you 4 World Series titles. But I don't think it's a stretch to say, Chris, that consumer confidence, you know, using the business term of consumer confidence, is at an all-time low and getting worse by the day, I think, for the ownership group and how they've handled things. Because it feels like one stupid mistake after another. And and even though the Mookie Betts thing felt inevitable, it didn't make it any less jarring when it actually happened, especially when you saw what the pathetic return was. And now this whole thing is on hold. Because,
well, yeah, it's just about a complete debacle.
You know,
now.
It's like they can't keep getting out of their own way. And I also think the new wonder kid, Chaim Bloom, it's been kind of a bad look for him. Did you really do your fair assessment on both these prospects you got back? And so now asking for more, you either look like a snake or you look stupid. And either way, it's not a good look.
Well, especially if it turns out they really can't get anything else. I mean, I thought the return was light to begin with, especially when I look at the Dodgers and the fact that they have one of baseball's most ballyhooed farm systems. You know, Verdugo's great, but he's already like at the major league level. And so I'm just surprised they couldn't get any of their other like top 30 prospects in the deal. And even everything I'm reading now is it's between the Red Sox and the Twins, and they're looking for an additional prospect from the Twins. I'd rather have an additional prospect from the better farm system, which is that of the Dodgers. So I don't understand why Bloom can't go back to his former boss and Friedman and say, look, you got to throw something. Because the team that benefits the most from this deal is the Dodgers. They should be the ones who want to push it over the finish line because they're getting the most talented player. I guess you could argue the Red Sox benefit the most because they dump the salary and get under the luxury tax. But really, like the Dodgers at this point, they have other deals that are contingent upon getting Mookie Betts, the deal with the Angels for Peterson. So if you're Bloom, how come you're not going back to Friedman and being like, look, we can't get this done with the Twins. You got to throw in one of your top 30 prospects from your loaded farm system.
Yeah, and I just think that was a bad move for him in the first place to even try to deal with that team. Like, you couldn't try to get it done with the Padres because, again, if you don't know, I mean, the relationship with Friedman and Bloom, they were together with Tampa, but Bloom was the underling.
Yeah, you know? He was like, his Padawan.
Yeah, and so, of course, the guy above him, even though he's with a different team, is going to end up wiping the floor with him like he did. I think he would have tried to deal with a different team or maybe even hold off until the trade deadline. The whole thing was just a mess.
I mean, I think they waited too long to begin with to really engage on this and to make a decision. I give Bloom credit for being in a tough situation, and he sparked a bidding war between the Padres and Dodgers really out of nothing, out of the ether. I think at the end of the day, I would love to know what the edict was from ownership, because I feel like to a degree his hands were tied, because the difference between the two teams he was trying to deal bets to, where one team would take David Price, the other team was not taking David Price. The Padres did not have the financial wherewithal to take Price. And so I feel like his hands were tied to a degree in terms of, well, you have to basically deal with the Dodgers. And he obviously sort of moved the Dodgers up, or should have, using the Padres as a stalking horse. But at the end of the day, it just looks like Daddy Friedman wiped the floor with him, doesn't
it? It totally does. Oh, 100%. Brandon in Boston on the Patriots quarterback.
How you guys doing? Thanks for taking my phone call. So I just want to talk about, Tom Brady. I think it's time to kick the tires on this guy. I think they should reach out to the Chiefs and get the backup Matt Moore. We see how he produced when Mahomes went down. As long as you set up weapons, you don't have to break the bank with him. So you can set up some weapons with him, and I'll start with Matt Moore. I mean, he won 5 out of 6 games. You can see what he could. We see how he produces with elite talent around him.
Why wouldn't you want to put elite talent around Brady then instead?
Because you're going to have to pay Brady, and how are you going to get those weapons surrounded by Brady? You're going to have the same problem. So that's get a cheap quarterback, buy weapons. So I want to know your thoughts on Matt Moore.
I saw him with the Dolphins. Those are my thoughts on Matt Moore.
And the Carolina Panthers going back. I mean, he's a journeyman's journeyman. He's a backup's backup.
It's like one of your assorted McNowns.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. Like, I don't know, give credit to Andy Reid for, them not completely collapsing when Mahomes was out with an injury and, they had Matt Moore in there. But he's just a backup. Like, no, Dalton, Mariota, whatever.
Well, Mariota maybe.
I know. You seem high on
him
for
some
reason.
I'm high on him. Hawaiian Tebow, your guy.
Yeah.
There's something there. Again,
number two overall pick. I mean, at least
there's talent.
Yeah.
And he's beat the pants off the Patriots. And I'll say this, too. Go back and look at Steve Young's early years in the NFL with Tampa Bay. They were not impressive. I don't think anybody would have been like, Steve Young's going to be Steve Young. So sometimes a change of scenery, particularly if it comes with a great all-time coach, Bill Walsh, Bill Belichick, you can get the most. You can extract that talent from that guy. And I think that could happen with Mariota.
And Josh McDaniels does have an affinity for mobile quarterbacks, so maybe he could polish that turd into something. But Matt Moore, don't be fooled by what you saw in a couple of games or a handful of games earlier this season with the Chiefs. That's more about the weapons and Andy Reid. Well, that came out of left field.
It did.
I can understand.
What's A.G. Feely up to these days? Because I might rather have him than Matt Moore if that's what we're doing.
Right. He's got that hot soccer wife. At least there would be some, you know.
Yeah, she's a great athlete. She's a better athlete than he is.
Something that comes with that. But
just like Zach Ertz, Julie Ertz, better athlete than he is.
A Matt Moore call. Wow, now I've heard it all. Okay, we're going to pause here. We're going to get you caught up in the Sports Hub headlines. Bruins got a game later today. Keep you updated there. And then we'll start the Sports Hub Celtics show. Thought it was a interesting and, frankly, aggravating week for the Celtics, at least off the court in regard to the trade deadline. So we'll get to that next here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. Visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.
Playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real-money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.